must be at least 36 to ride the Inter-Miami hype train. It's That's So MLS. With myself, Nick Thornton. With me, as always, is Andrew Bates.
Nick, how are you doing?
I am doing okay. I'm fresh off the rumor mill. How are you?
I'm doing well. They've wanted to make the MLS playoffs more like, you know, hockey or whatever, but hockey with these series, but in a hockey playoff, like, part of what's so amazing about the hockey playoffs is that there's a buffet of games every once in a while. And I feel like instead this is like Brazilian steakhouse of games. Where it's like, would you like Seattle versus Dallas? Now would you like some Columbus versus Atlanta? Every once in a while, somebody passes by your table with a new playoff game for you to watch.
It's true, which I don't, honestly, I don't hate, because I found Decision Day, like, it's a little bit much to have all these games kicking off at exactly the same time when you're like, well, I kind of would like to pay attention to one of these. But that's okay. I can watch 10 games at once. Anyway, it's been a minute since we've chatted. Obviously, Decision Day has come and gone. Decisions have been made. Days have turned to nights. The playoffs are well underway. We already have some teams out of the playoffs. But of course, outside of even that, still quite a bit of news, because of course there's the teams that didn't make it. We've had some roster updates. Just hot off the presses today, MLSsoccer.com blowing some more wind into the sails of the Luis Suarez to Inter Miami rumor that seems to be a go.
I don't care about Luis Suarez to Inter Miami. What about Victor Vazquez to Inter Miami?
Hey, now we're talking. Yeah. I'm actually more interested in the TFC roster updates if we want to start there.
Well, I feel like we need to address the elephant in the room, which is in a totally legit and not eye rolling way, the best player in the world went to an MLS player. The Ballon d'Or went to an MLS player this year.
I know, yeah. And then subsequently, that Ballon d'Or winner did not win the best MLS newcomer of the year. Which,
God,
I remember from the last show, you and I were at one point trying to find how many goals Messi had scored in MLS, and then we drifted elsewhere and we didn't come back to it.
I think the answer is 3.
I think the answer is 0.
Zero? Oh, I thought I was telling myself it was 3 goals, 6 A, but yeah, you're probably right.
In MLS play, 0. So I feel like it's only fair that it goes to a player that has scored goals.
A goal.
And also, I mean, I feel like at this point, like, the Ballon d'Or is the one award we should be still nominating Messi for. Everything else, I'm just like, I think he's disqualified, because it's just like, it's unfair otherwise. Like, give him everything, or just exclude him from all categories moving forward. You've had your shot, Messi. We get it. You're the best.
People have noted that the voting from this round tends to be benefiting anybody that was in the... tends to be benefiting World Cup performances, we'll put it this way.
Yeah.
So that doesn't really surprise me to see that, like, that's why... You know, he's put in that position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, I mean, for Giacomakis, like, obviously has had an amazing season. He's continued that in the playoffs as well. So I feel like that's fair. I'm happy with that.
And as you note, they're trying to work out who's going in one place, who's going, who's staying. What's the new look for Inter Miami next year, do you think?
Yeah, it's been interesting to see the roster updates. I don't think there's too many surprises in there so far. I think the big one is obviously Tata Martinez has confirmed that Joseph Martinez will not be back at Inter Miami next year.
Martinez.
Yeah.
So Tata Martino.
Sorry, Martino.
It's interesting. You think I think that he's been, not that he's been in every game, changing every game, but Miami haven't had a great year. And Joseph's been pretty good for them at that time.
Yeah, but I mean, and this is the interesting thing when, you know, obviously the hype around Inter Miami and its new look is that you got to pay the price of everything. And the price of buying a championship-winning team and is that you do sacrifice parts of the culture. And I agree. I mean, I think that, you know, to move on from Joseph Martinez to bring in Luis Suarez, sure, I understand that. If you need to have some more teeth in your attack, as it were. But it also means that you are moving on from players that have been there during the crappy times. And as we've seen with FC Cincinnati, that's, and Sporting Kansas City, like, that can actually do more sometimes to build your culture and build a winning team is when you have players that have been in the shit and gotten you through. Now, I don't think that Joseph Martinez leaving Inter Miami is going to be, like, the thing that breaks their culture. I just think that it's interesting to watch these things develop over time. We've seen it at LA Galaxy, where there's decisions that are made that on just, like, a star power basis seem to make sense. And it doesn't always work out. Clearly for Inter Miami so far, things have worked out pretty well. But I don't think they're doing Joseph dirty. I'm just curious to see if he will stay in MLS or be looking elsewhere. But yeah, there's starting to be some really interesting players with options declined or being out of contract that are, you know, going to be up for grabs. And I think it'll be interesting to see where some of them, including, you know, maybe not big names, but I think really talented players that have essentially been let go for free that will be up for grabs next year.
Give us Kai Kamara.
Yeah. Well, I saw Greg Rajat Singh from TFC has had his option declined. I thought he did really, really well when he was filling in as the starting goalkeeper there in the summer. And so, yeah, things like that where you just go get really talented prospects that you can bring in for next to nothing. Yeah, we'll see. We will see.
That is that we're seeing that develop as things are going with the and wheels. I think we see more and more of that, like as clubs start to look on, and more teams get eliminated. We're getting updates about the Colorado Rapids are down to four in their manager search. Two of them we hear. One of them is interim coach Chris Little. The other one is Chris Armas, who was the 2018 Supporters Shield winner with New York Red Bulls in the end of the Jesse Marsh season. Mm-hmm. And then that did not buoy him to success in Toronto. So perhaps we're going to replace Robin Fraser with another ex-Toronto coach.
Oh, man. I feel for Rapids fans. Like, I got nothing against Chris Armas. He seems like a good guy. But the Rapids need something wildly different than Chris Armas, no? Stranger things have happened, but that doesn't feel like the recipe for success.
Like you said, nothing wrong against Armas. Not that Armas couldn't have success somewhere, but I don't know that turnaround expert is what he's known for.
Depends which direction you're turning things around to. Don't know about that one. I was interested to see the Galaxy roster updates. Douglas Costa has departed Galaxy. And I've just been kind of trying to listen into what Greg Vanney's had to say. As their season wrapped up and in the postseason. And he's made a number of comments about high-value resources needing to be on the pitch in terms of, like, if we're paying a player a lot of money, they need to be starting. They need to be collecting considerable minutes. And so this move and those comments make me feel like Chicharito will not be suiting up for LA Galaxy next season. And not that that's any like wild big bet that I'm a huge departure from what everyone else is saying, but I think that that's going to be a big theme for Galaxy.
That's how your spider senses are tingling.
Yeah, yeah, and it is too bad. I mean, Chicharito obviously has put his blood, sweat, and tears into Galaxy, and he's been an amazing leader and wonderful spokesperson. But I mean, if the Galaxy's focus is having players on the pitch for a full 90 minutes day in, day out, Chicharito's not going to fit that bill. He hasn't his entire time in LA. That's not his fault, but I'm expecting that Greg Vanney's going to be making very different decisions about the types of players they're bringing in than what's been there. And it's obvious he's only been able to do so much in this season, but with the, I believe now the, all their regulations around transfers have lifted, I think we'll be looking at a pretty different Galaxy next season. And a team that down the stretch, I know that they hardly had success in their last few games, but like, give them credit. There was a team that was out there fighting even when there was nothing left to fight for. So I think that there is still a core of players at Galaxy that they can have success with, but I think the expensive ones may not be there.
It's tough to see because when Chicharito is rolling, he is an incredible engine for that team. Even though he's injured, like spent some time injured, I'm feeling more positive than I have in past years about Chicharito. Those things that you've said about needing that the resource to be on the pitch, needing that to be somebody that you can rely on, I think those are good. The question for me would be that it almost seems like the idea of this team is based around, you know, the team is in some senses, like the theory of how is this team going to do well is based around Chicharito. So mm-hmm. if you're going to, without him, it's not to say that Jovalcic has not been good, that you know, Ricky Puig has not been good. I think that if they keep pushing with him, like, he could be in that same position of Denis Bouanga, of being like one of the top, you know, players in week in, week out. Perhaps that's the new idea for the team, but it didn't quite work this time. So I feel like if you are going to bet on moving on from Chicharito, finding a replacement, you know, idea, a replacement core concept for and a replacement star is going to be important.
I think that that's an approach, and you're probably right in that that's what will happen. I think given... I see the team being retooled around Puig, and you maybe see Victor Vasquez type, also available CJ Sapong up top, and you know, obviously supported by Jovalcic. Maybe a lower capped player who is going to give you the same thing, right? Like, I think that realistically, if you're going to be a playoff challenging team, you need a striker that's going to score you at least 12 goals, hopefully, you know, 13, 14, getting up into the teens. And unfortunately, as we've seen, not every 36 plus or 34 plus year old player is Messi and can just come on and immediately contribute. I don't think it's money well spent in MLS to be bringing in an older DP striker. I know that there's still rumors about Giroud coming to MLS. I don't think to Galaxy, but nothing has changed since Messi came to MLS in terms of like older players sometimes struggling, especially strikers and other forward players struggling to have the same production in MLS. Some work out, we know that. But also, right, a lot don't, and Galaxy has played this game again and again and again of spending a massive amount of their cap towards a DP striker. And obviously, even when it worked with Ibrahimovic, it still didn't save them from a terrible season. So,
didn't work in the way they wanted it to.
Yeah, I mean, that was the only thing that worked. But, yeah, I'm really curious to see. But I think you're probably right in that they're still, it's Galaxy. They're always going to have want to be bringing in somebody that has some name recognition. I just think they can maybe be a little bit smarter about that and go a little younger, you know? There's the same for the 27, 28-year-old players. If you're going to spend the money, I think you go a little less famous and a little bit more closer to their actual prime, you know?
When we spoke last week, after we hung up, I went and sat down on the couch and checked my Instagram stories, and I saw that Christine Sinclair had posted a story that just had the a pair of cleats hanging from the goalposts.
Mm, yeah.
And it was the time people were speculating about what it meant. And by the next day, news sources were reporting it. Sinclair has announced her international retirement pending the end of this year. And she will, after bowing out for Canada, play one more season for Portland. She kind of talked about both of these aspects in her book, where she talked about, like, what she really would want to do. The last thing that she wants is a victory run. And she's getting one, but she's not getting sort of like a year-long one. She said, I want to just snap retire like Tom Brady in her book. So, right. So that didn't quite happen, but yeah. That was my thought when I saw those boots hanging on there, is like, ah, yes, this is always happening. And the other thing that she talked about in her book was wanting to be able to focus on her professional career without having to, you know, be a part of two teams kind of late in her career. She said, as the men get to do. For you know major stars, mm-hmm. and certainly she deserves to take a little bit of a rest and respite. They've booked they had games in Montreal and Halifax this week. Unfortunately, I was not well positioned. I was not planning to go to the Halifax one before that news broke, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. I was not able to attend. But it went great. But it'll be it's a sad moment to see, you know, real legend of the game, but like one of the centers of the Canadian women's national team universe. But we will have about a year to think and reflect as before she kicks the ball for the last time.
Yeah, which is the only thing that softens the blow. Like, as you said, it's like it was always coming. this isn't a big shock at all. And we still get a little bit more Christine Sinclair. She's still got gas left in the tank, which is great. But it just sucks when it's like, you know, the thing's coming and then it finally comes. And you're like, I wasn't actually ready.
Sad.
It's hard to spin this, but I'm glad that we get to like have the opportunity to send her off in style and just appreciate everything that she's done and how much of the change that we see in the game is because of her.
Let us cherish the Christine Sinclair that we do get.
Hell yeah, and like she's got nothing left to prove. She's done it all, so it's certainly well earned. Let's talk about something else.
Well, we have playoffs. Playoffs? You kidding me?
We got playoffs. It has been a time.
The whole first round, first match day. The first round is now three match days. We can talk. Well, why don't we actually start with the preliminary to all of this, which was the wild card games.
Right.
The one vestige of the knockout games that all playoff games were last season. That was on a Wednesday, and I was not watching the first game, but I watched the second one, and I was like, oh, geez, I hope a lot happens here. And it was the nil-nil through the penalty kicks between Kansas City and San Jose. Which had the interesting intrigue of being the rematch from the 2020 game,
mm-hmm.
With PKs, including Tim Melia saving Christian Espinosa both times.
We love a through line here. There's so many good goalkeepers in the MLS playoffs right now, and I mean, like, it stands to reason that the cream rises to the top, and the best teams have the best goalkeepers. But it's just, it's absurd, but it also feels really good that Tim Melia is still among them. You know, I thought Sporting Kansas City has looked really well. Didn't just look; they were the best team in MLS, I think, for the last several months leading up to the playoffs. But just, you know, they've got players back. They look very energized and organized. You know, and San Jose are no slouches. They certainly had some inconsistency this season, but overall, I mean, this is a very different Earthquakes than we're used to talking about. But just what a massive, massive game for Tim Melia. I mean, this, as good as the whole team was in this game, it just felt very vintage SKC to have Tim Melia just completely stiff the competition in PKs. And just typical Tim Melia too. Friend of the show, Tim Melia, looking completely
friend of the show, Tim Melia,
unfazed by the entire affair.
That was great. It's been great to see, you know, something of a resurgence for Sporting Kansas City in these playoffs. The other wild card match was not a nil nil.
No, I was gonna say it was not nil nil.
It was a seven goal. Seven-goal stunner with Red Bulls running up a 3-0. Red Bulls ran up a 3-0 lead with an amazing free-kick goal by Tolkien.
Yeah.
Just really pretty. And then Charlotte hits a bicycle kick. And
yeah.
New York Red Bulls respond right away with a goal from Barlow. So eventually it's 5-2, but New York runs up the lead and is able to maintain it.
Yeah. I honestly, Charlotte surprised me so many times this season. Obviously, they beat Inter Miami to hold them out of the playoffs and push themselves in. It's unfortunate to get knocked out in the first wild card game, but I still feel like overall, if I'm a Charlotte fan, I think this season, as much as you want it to keep going, you'd have to say it's certainly a pretty successful campaign overall from where they were. I mean, when I watch Charlotte, I feel like there's definitely team chemistry there. There's times where it breaks down, but I feel like they've already got a bit of a personality of just being a team that can ride through, as evidenced by playing a very good Red Bull side, and they still got two goals. Like, they were in it at times. Not a long time, but at times. Yeah, maybe two or three key pieces away from being a really, really solid team. But overall, pretty good from them and from Red Bulls. I mean, from a team that I feel like we've not talked a ton about this season, and just because it hasn't felt like there has been a lot to talk about, they got themselves in a pretty good position this year. Obviously, if you win the wild card, then you go up against pretty stiff competition. They've already played Cincinnati and have now been on the receiving end of getting pummeled. Cincinnati won that game 3-0.
Brief discussion about structure. It kind of felt that these games, to me, more than past years where there have been wild card games because of the new setup with the three game series, that this has almost felt like a decision day two.
Yep.
Or like, you know, like more of a World Cup half spot or it's like you're qualifying for the playoffs. This isn't the first round of the playoffs. This is the last playoff qualifier.
So you made it into the playoffs.
So you made it. It feels like just resolving, you know, New York gets that in on, you know, the drama of decision day where New York gets the 94th minute penalty kick against mm-hmm. Nashville, eliminating Montreal.
Yeah. 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 That's right. The late John Tolkien Ripper that goes in, and then you get. You win the wild card, and then, I mean, I don't know. I certainly don't think that they are out of it by any stretch. Obviously, these three-game or best-of-three fixtures are, it gives you a shot. But, you know, this opening game against Cincinnati was always going to be difficult, and it was pretty decisive. I feel like they're a team that always makes a few mistakes in just about every game, and I mean, you slip up against Cincinnati as they did here. I mean, Acosta's first goal from nearly the halfway line is just sort of typical of, like, you know, Cincinnati can grind you down slowly, but if you give them just a half a chance, especially Acosta, he's gonna do you dirty.
That chipped shot is amazing.
Yeah,
it was like Cornell comes out to challenge, and he's able to sort of get in touch with it, but the ball spills out and it's chipped in.
Yeah, when I think he takes down Badgie, and at the moment and when it was happening, I was like, oh, that's going to be a red card for him. I think he did get enough of the ball, but it pops up and spills to Acosta, who you just see, like, the ball's still in the air, and he's doing the math of, like, testing wind resistance and being like, yeah, I'll take one touch to settle, and I'll just... pop it over. It doesn't need to be quick. Goalkeeper's out of position. Just needs to be straight. It's like watching a golfer set up a putt, you know? At least that's how easy he made it look.
Barreal's second goal with the half volley was really pretty as well.
Yeah, Barreal is another talent that, I mean, I wouldn't say has flown under the radar. Obviously, he's been on other people's radars, but... is a pretty outstanding piece that Cincinnati have in their back pocket. So we'll see. You know, again, Red Bulls have a chance. But Cincinnati feel pretty real deal to me right now.
Of all the teams in the first round, one has won away in this first match. The higher-seeded team has won every game. Except... for Sporting Kansas City, which went to St. Louis and
left with a
4-1 result.
Oh, this did not go well for St. Louis. just bucketing rain, too. It's weird. I'm kind of used to sort of talking shit about Sporting Kansas City. Lord knows we've done that over the years here. But they're kind of hard to hate right now. You know, like a team that's been just... hammered by injuries and really at some points just about as bad as it's ever been for Sporting Kansas City, and they've just gone on this absolute tear. You know, their first goal's coming from Ndembe, like a left back at the edge of the box. I was a little bit surprised by this one, to be honest. I thought St. Louis would eventually be the heartbreakers to Sporting Kansas City, but this feels pretty decisive. Like, I mean, I know St. Louis is going to be out for blood in game two, but they looked just shattered in this game. I mean, to lose at home, to get pummeled at home like this. And now they've got to go to Children's Mercy Park and try to get a result against a very reinvigorated Sporting Kansas City stadium that I'm sure will be rocking. Like, never say never, but this feels to me like one that Sporting Kansas City is going to go in and be like, no, we don't need three games, thank you.
With the home advantage, we're seeing this is going to be a challenge. Shout out to perennial favorite Tim Parker for getting the one St. Louis's lone goal. But I think that the story would seem to be that for Sporting Kansas City is a little bit based on their like ability to load, to get those overloads. The save shot that falls to Voltaire who scores.
Yeah.
Also, the amazing goal from Kinda, who runs out of coverage, to stand alone in a crowd of five. That was kind of the issue, is putting lots of pressure on, and then also in some senses, given lots of room to move.
I've noticed this with teams that play three at the back and five at the back, is that there seems to be at points where it just kind of collapses, in, especially when you're inside your own box, or the attacking play is inside your own box, where it's remarkably easy for strikers to just stand between goalkeeper or between center backs, and it's not clear at least it's not clear to the center backs who's supposed to be marking him. And so it's sort of this like false sense of like strength in numbers. I believe St. Louis was trying to play with five at the back here. And you actually end up not covering anyone. So that will be an interesting thing to watch. But even, you know, even if St. Louis had played better here, I mean, Sporting Kansas City, like you said, creating the overloads. This was a somewhat rotated squad as well. Tim Mealy is obviously up for the challenge. Like, you know, Tim Parker tied things up right after Sporting's first goal. They had some half chances here, but it just, Sporting Kansas City looks so confident, so focused. Who knew? Who knew? There's always one team that comes in and you're just like, okay, well, I didn't call that. I certainly didn't call that.
Speaking of false sense of security, a defensive player of the week has to be go to Nashville, who said, why don't we give Cartagena about, in the Orlando Nashville game, why don't we give him about 5 minutes to line up his shot on the outside the box? He's pretty far out, so it's not like he's going to try and shoot from there, is he?
Mm-hmm.
And shoot he did, score he did. Nashville hit the bar in that game. They had some, both teams traded chances, but I wouldn't necessarily say that was one where Nashville was constantly knocking at the door, because Orlando had just as many good shots, if not more, in the second half to potentially add a second.
Yeah.
But 1-0 brings a 1-0 series lead.
It sure do. Yeah, and I mean, Nashville, like, we know them as being a pretty defensively sound team, but the goals as of late have just not been there. I rate Orlando pretty highly. I think that they may run into the Cincinnati Beast, or, you know, potentially the Philadelphia Beast as well. But there's still a part of me that feels like if Orlando's in the final, I'm not that surprised. Like, they've just continued to, it's not been perfect, but they grind you down. They can I feel like they're kings of the 1-0 win, and if you can hold that, Galese is again another just absurd goalkeeper. I don't know, man, Orlando's chances feel really, really good to me. I mean, as good as they've been in Orlando's history.
You mentioned the Philadelphia machine. Got off to a 3-1 start in the series against New England. New England could have scored on the 9th minute, which is one of those, like, what-ifs. Historical what-ifs. What if they had been the first ones to score? But, in fact, on 15th minute, the keeper clears out Carranza, and Philadelphia gets the penalty and scores. Jackson clears out Carranza.
Yeah, yeah. And then also, Carlos Hill is out, injured from this game. So, yeah, I don't know. I still hesitate to completely bet against New England, because, you know, they've not exactly had a great season, but they've shown moments. But I think one of the questions that we continually ask of the Union is, are they going to show up in the big moment? And again, just felt pretty decisive that they did. I believe they're also missing Jacob Glesnes for their next match, which is a big blow for them. So I feel like maybe Heal and Glesnes out in the next match, at least the next match for either side, that means that maybe that cancels each other out. You know, Bo was able to pull one back for New England, but, you know, Bo is one of those players that I feel like he had for, you know, about 6 minutes a game. He just looks untouchable and incredible. But it needs to be for longer than 6 minutes to get the gears going, you know? So I don't know. How are you feeling about this series? Do you think Philly does the damage and takes it, or do you think New England has still got a shot here?
There is as you say, New England has Philadelphia has been doing great. I am interested to see to what extent home field advantage plays through to these second games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we saw the higher seeded home team win almost all of them. Will it be, of course, when you go the other way, you're not just dealing with home advantage, you're also dealing with, you know, the seeding, and which is sometimes lopsided. So that we may not see 100%, it might be closer to 50-50, but, I mean, Philadelphia, New England is the 4-5, so I feel like there will be a chance for New England to at least get a result and then go back to Chester to see what they can do. One particular yikesome thing that took place in this is that Kai Wagner is in investigation for using a racial slur. He's alleged to have used an anti-Asian slur against Bobby Wood during the game. I don't know if it's been said what has happened with that yet, because the Athletic report on that is from Monday. So, so I'm not entirely sure if we've got a decision on that yet. The Athletic notes in their last note of the story that Wagner is in the final year of his contract with the union and seems like he wants to leave, seems like he has been frustrated that year. So it's never acceptable to do stuff like this if that's what the investigation finds, and frustrating that a player like that is potentially, you know, you can never even really comment about this stuff, but it's just really disappointing if this is somebody's idea of a cranky way to act out.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Bye. More like bye, Wagner.
The Vancouver Whitecaps, I feel like we're loaded with storyline. That was the interesting decision day situation, was that a 1-1 draw for Vancouver enabled three more games against LAFC.
Yeah.
That was the one with Propo, you know, in the decision game. We didn't see as much of that in the second game, but that decision day game was it. BC Place and Crepo. Ryan Gault was saved twice against, failed to score penalties twice against Crepo. And the second time, you know, the pen is given, and he is just right up in Gault's face trying to give him a big hug.
Yeah. There's a. I feel like he learned his lessons from Tigres and has brought some gamesmanship into his game that I don't love, but we also know that, like, Crepo has always been a character. He's always in the mix. He's always a competitor. I think he's within his right to, you know, try to throw somebody off, and to his credit, he did.
Harjo Hall reported that Sam Adekube came up to him and jokingly said, "When did you become such a big boop?"
Mm.
I played with you in the Japan window. What happened?
Yeah.
So that sort of, you know, twisted the knife.
And that was
really,
the high
really
point of things.
Started, really got people started on this idea of this series and the potential for you know, a real rivalry time. The game was tied heading into halftime. It was not tied at full time with LAFC winning 5-2 at home.
Yeah. I mean, good guy Brian White showed up. My read of this is, and unfortunately this is probably the more pessimistic overall read of this series, is that I didn't think Vancouver played that badly. We definitely made mistakes, but like I feel like this is just kind of like LAFC is just that good right now. We've had their number before. As good as they have been, Vancouver seems to find ways to get under their skin, get results, either draws or wins. We won in their barn this year, but it feels like Steve Cherundolo is a fool me once kind of coach, and we were just cracked wide open at times. But also, I'm like, you've got Denny Bouanga running at you. As we've seen all season, not an MLS defender out there is able to stop him. So,
doing
Bouanga stuff. You're like, how do I even argue with that? Like, what are you supposed to do? Like, oh, you should have just like chopped his legs off or made him not be able to run. He's too good. It's unfair. The wheels definitely came off. They have opened the upper bowl for Game 2 here in Vancouver, so it should be a loud and spicy affair. I will be in attendance. I'm feeling super excited about the possible outcome, but I'm very excited about the atmosphere. And, you know, if we go out... I will say, like, we're going out in style against arguably the best team in MLS right now. Certainly one of the top three or four teams in MLS. Certainly favorites to go the distance. And I just want a good battle. I want a Brian White goal, and I want a battle. Preferably as few Kripo antics as possible. But it's the playoffs, baby. I'm in playoffs mode. I'm here for the chaos. I think there's going to be a lot of goals, but I'll be back next time with my report on what it was like. And I really hope it's a reversal of this, but I'm not feeling super confident about that.
I'm hopeful for you because I'm feeling a little better about this game. Again, trying to think about the home advantage effects, but in general, it's like the Whitecaps have been able to beat LAFC, or draw LAFC at home. They have been able to beat LAFC. Like, you can take LAFC unawares. This just kind of felt like when you are playing LAFC at home and you have their full attention, it will be a little bit more challenging to get the result. But that doesn't mean that something exciting can't come on the 4th, so...
It doesn't mean it couldn't happen.
Houston, well, something exciting happened for Houston.
Sure did.
The 2-1 winning over RSL. Herrera blasted it in from the top of the box after Karskia heads it back to him.
Who else, Herrera?
RSL tie it, but... it's Bassey getting the second goal for Houston. McMath gets a hand on it, but it heads back to him after I think Corey Barrett pulls back and rips it off the post.
Yeah, RSL just have some real moments, don't they? Where you're like, this is the moment you're choosing to dribble out of the back. Okay, it did not go well. Do we know what happened to Chicho Arango? Is he out injured?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Great. Well, no update for you there, folks, but I do not believe he played in this game. I thought RSL looked really flat in the first half, as they are prone to do, and just kind of ball-watching. But, like, as good as Houston have been and as good as they were in this game, I still think this is not a terrible result. And I don't necessarily think RSL is going to win this series. I feel like we're going to be seeing a SKC-Houston matchup in the semifinals, which I don't hate that outcome. But, like, if RSL... I think that RSL can win the next one. I think they probably get knocked out in the third. But this one is one of the series that feels a little bit more up in the air for me. Like, could go either way.
Caleb Turner on Twitter X says that Arango has said that he is back from his injury in an Instagram post.
Oh,
happy
great.
To be back from the injury and ready for war.
Well, that bodes well for them. Yeah, RSL's got a lot of great pieces, obviously, and Arango is one of them. So, never say never. I feel like if you can win the next one at home and then take them to a draw in Houston in the third and maybe do it in penalties, like, there's a way through, right?
Seattle snaps Dallas's undefeated streak with a 2-0 win at home. Penalties for Albert Rusnak and Jordan Morris scoring the second. Heading it across from Nuhu.
Yeah, I watched a good chunk of this game, and it really felt like I think Dallas's decision game, they finally scored a swath of goals, but that seemed to be a one-time thing. Did not carry over to the playoffs. And, I mean, they generated chances, but just not great finishing, as has been the case this season. And Seattle's sort of looking a little bit more like their old selves. Dallas also suffered a big blow in losing Alan Velasco with a knee injury, which has now been confirmed as an ACL and LCL tear in his left knee. That's a season-ending one. So our thoughts to him, but that's a massive piece for Dallas, and a Dallas that really looked like they struggled to come up with much in this game. So in my humble opinion... I don't think it would shock too many people to say. I think Seattle goes through in this one.
Columbus, the Cucho Show.
The Cucho Show.
Cucho Hernandez with the scores on the break. Ball from Matan falls to him, and he hits this brilliant shot. Brilliant! And then Matan is fouled for a penalty, and Cucho scores it. Is that also an assist? If you create... Does that count as two assists?
I don't know. I think you get to eat first at team lunch the next day, but I don't know that it goes on your scorecard officially. But yeah, Cucho doing Cucho things. I completely forgot that Diego Rossi plays for Columbus now. I feel like Columbus brought in a lot of players in sort of one of those dips, and they kind of fell off my radar. And then watching this game, I thought Atlanta's been really, really good. I think Pineda has done an excellent job turning Atlanta around. But, boy, they were chasing this one. They were also missing Thiago Almada, who's got a red card on decision day. So, you know, next game in Atlanta with Almeida, I think there's maybe a shot here. But how are you feeling about this setup? Do you think Columbus can take this one?
I mean, it seems not to be the broken record here, but it seemed like everything was working. It seemed like the lower.com fans were losing. This was also a big factor. You know, the atmosphere, I think, played a role in the Montreal game as well. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, once you flip that, you put Atlanta, you put Giacomakis at home, what can happen with it. I don't think Columbus is unbeatable, but they certainly, I didn't see stuff from Atlanta to challenge them on that occasion.
I agree. Certainly needs to be very different from Atlanta if they're going to stay in this one. And it feels like even taking them to a draw might be difficult, and you know, I think especially at this stage, I mean, at any stage, you don't necessarily want to draw it out to PKs, but Columbus is a team that I don't want to be going up against in PKs. I want to be getting the business done in the 90. I don't want Cucho Hernandez facing down my goalkeeper as the first penalty taker to knock the stuffing out.
I have, so as you can tell, I've been thinking about this home effects thing a lot. And we've gotten through the first round of games. There has been lots of discussion about how different it is to other international soccer leagues to go with the MLS 1.0 best of three game series, resurrecting it. I don't know if it's going to be possible yet to decide if I'm for or against till the end. Because I, to be honest, always thought that first round games, that the first half of two double-legged games were, like, not that interesting to me because they didn't have the same amount of drama to them. But it does, again, like, we haven't had penalties in any of these, but my comment on penalties during group stage in the League's Cup was, isn't it so... isn't it so anticlimactic to have penalties and then just go back to business the next week after that? So
that's kind of how
it feels when you have, you know, a 5-2 or a 3-1 or like some big result where it's like, you know, you wipe it off the scorecard the next game. I'm interested to see who this all is going to benefit. Are we going to come out of this with all but one top seed advancing? In that case, it'll be pretty clear that having the two home game advantages was a pretty big thing to give to sides. The other way of looking at it is that it benefits, you know, a team that does lose heavily away from home because you don't. The team that does lose heavily because it's not on their ledger for the next game. Usually, the more games you add, it's like simple soccer math that the more games you add in a series, the more likely it is that the favored team is going to win. So, will be interesting to see whether that does add interest or if it kind of kills interest.
Yeah. I agree. I agree with all of that. I think one addendum from me is just that I'm really glad to see the death of extra time. I've always hated it. I don't think I need an extra half hour of tired players running at each other. It almost never accomplishes anything. So I love the format of just going straight to PKs after the 90. Yes, it means potentially lots of penalties, I get it. It's a bit of like a roll of the dice, and you're always left wondering, like on a different day with a different wind direction, does your team make it through? But I think if you're going to be adding potentially more soccer games, I certainly don't want to be watching 120 minutes for three of those. Not that I don't love watching soccer, I just. The extra time has always felt like just 30 more minutes of anxiety without a lot to show for it. I feel like half the time it would end up at PKs anyway, and you're just like, all right, it's midnight, man. I got shit to do. Somebody win this game, please.
I definitely agree with that. And the fact that it can feel like extra. I think that the way that they're playing it, at least the final would have a full 120. And the conference finals, and I think also the conference semifinals are going to be single games. So I think they're doing the best of three series like once or twice, and then they're going back to knockouts that have a little bit more of a traditional makeup later in the playoffs.
That's again, and
this is the thing about the wild cards, the payoff to we have all of these playoff teams is that, but. The bottom 4 to 6 teams in the playoffs are fucked.
Yeah.
Welcome to the game. Welcome to the big show.
Yeah, you're right. The it looks. Oh wait, no, never mind. I think you're right about that. The later games will not have the best of three.
Uh,
that would be absurd. We'd be playing until
January. Speaking of 120 minute games, the Canadian Premier League final was recently played. The North Star Cup. I'm happy they've introduced a trophy, but I'm confused about what's happening with the title lineage of the previous KPL championships. Is it the first North Star Cup, or are we just renaming the North Star Shield? Like, what? Who has the title? That's a question for me. This was a rematch, the first North Star Shield match with Forge versus Calvary. It was 0-0 at halftime, or it was 0-0 at halftime. It was 0-0 full time. It was 0-0 at 100 minutes, but it was 2-1 by the end of the match. After the trade back and forth by Cavalry scores, with Moosey scores, Daddy Bongo scores for Forge, and then an Olympico goal in extra time of the 120th, a goal directly from the corner kick, I believe, by Tristan Borges, seals it. And so I got to admit, I'm not the biggest Forge fan. Nothing against them or their fans. I just have never been that interested. It was a pretty hype scene over there as they won in such spectacular fashion.
An Olympico will do that for you.
So often.
It's hard to argue with that, you know? You're like, all right, well, if you're going to do that, I suppose
think about that thing. That Vargas Charlotte bicycle kick goal. It was like the middle goal in a blowout that unfortunately doesn't get the love that it could have. It was 111th. I said it was extra time. It wasn't. I said it was added time of extra time. It wasn't. It was 111th for Borges to score after the goals from Moosey and Batty Bonga, I think. Congratulations to the Canadian Premier League on a great season. The playoffs were interesting, but it seems like everybody had a good time, and it'll be interesting to see what they dream up for the next one. No Saskatchewan, I think. I am in our inflation era, I haven't gotten to do as much travel as I wanted to do. In my visit to, I've been trying to make a Whitecaps away game the last couple of years, and I don't know that I'm going to make it this year. So my Halifax versus Vancouver FC experience, maybe my soccer experience, my pro soccer experience of the year, and that was a pretty good one.
Yeah, not a terrible one to get in there. You never know. Maybe the Whitecaps make a deep playoff run here, but as you say, that doesn't make traveling any cheaper. So anyway. Lots more to happen. I think the playoffs have been good so far. I've been okay with the format. As I said, I kind of like the setup too, where there's just a couple of games to take in at once, and then you get a day break, and then there's more. It's been interesting so far. Obviously, still lots to play for. As you say, the big thing to be watching for is that home field advantage. Does that carry through into this week? As we start to see some teams potentially booking their ticket to the semifinals.
I won't ask who you think is going to win. We have this, bracket. I haven't filled it out yet. I'll try to get it together shortly, but of the teams that you've seen so far, who are you the most excited about of these from these eight matches? Who fires you up?
Um, I'm going to take Fires Me Up to mean, you know, maybe a slight underdog or a bit of a surprise because, I mean, it's hard not to be excited about Cincinnati. I do rate them highly, but I'm interested to see. I think Orlando excites me, as I said. They kind of fly under the radar, but are a really, really solid team. And Sporting Kansas City, like, I think that they can make it through to the semifinals. I don't know that they make it out, but their destiny is in their own hands, and that's always been a good thing for teams in the playoffs. So, like, never say never, right?
SKC is definitely a candidate to have a Portland year.
Right? And I feel like of the teams in the West, the way that they're playing right now, if there's anybody that can stop LAFC, it might end up being Houston, but like it could be SKC. I don't know that they necessarily will, but yeah, I think those are my answers. What about you?
That I was gonna say SKC. Definitely, if you look at that whole quarter of the bracket with St. Louis, SKC, Houston, RSL, I feel like that's a battle royal that's more of a battle royal than it is, you know, any one big established favorite in there for me. So, so it'll be interesting to see which of those four makes it to that particular conference final. As much as I was maybe casting aspersions on the wild card round, I guess I have come out of it with a particular attention to both Sporting Kansas City and New York. If New York can get a result at Red Bull Arena, maybe that becomes a little a more spicy affair.
Absolutely. I will say, I think that have we had any red cards in the playoffs yet? I don't know that we have.
No.
We certainly had no shortage of goals in some games with the yellows were piling up for sure. But yeah, I feel like you can only go so far, but in any MLS matchup, tournament, whatever, before you start to see some of those, and obviously injuries are happening as well. So yeah, you're right. I mean, it's still all there to play for, as they say, for a lot of these teams, and as ever, it's MLS. So if the Red Bulls end up finding a way to squeak through, I don't think it's necessarily outside of the realm of possibility.
Until we learn more about this, where can we find you online?
You can find me online at thatsomls.com and on Instagram, thatsomls. Where can we find you?
I'm at www.team-bates.com and Team Batesy on Instagram. I'm on Team Bates at bsky.social in that other formerly blue website that we sometimes discuss.
Beautiful.
Please rate, review, and subscribe. Give us the good review on the podcast.
Give us the good review, will ya?
That's right.
The one and, good review.
And please, to everybody who did not get sent off in the last set of games, keep it on with it.
Yeah.
Don't get sent off.